Blog Talk Radio.
That's what we're going to do. I got the New Republican attack ad against Hillary Clinton. I'm going to lead with that story. It's devastating. You know it's bad when they make an ad against Hillary Clinton and there's no logical counterpoint from people who are even Hillary Clinton supporters. Again, we're talking about a right-wing ad against Hillary that's just true. I'm telling you, this election is going to be so much closer than you think. Who was it? It was Nate Silver. I'm not even going to ruin it now because I think I'm going to do this story tomorrow. But he was on TV, and he gave some ridiculous percentage of Hillary Clinton's chances of winning. I think I might just absolutely tear that apart tomorrow. I think I'm going to do that. We also have an election today. I think it's Oregon and Kentucky. Is that correct? So if you're in those states, you know what to do. You don't even need me to say it. But also, as we move along here, we got Ted Cruz. He released another political ad after he dropped out. How does that make sense? Well, it doesn't make sense. Well, so why is he doing it? Well, I'm going to tell you. That's my job. That's why I'm here. And then later on in the show, we have the creationist Ken Ham, who's always funny to talk about. He decided to launch into an anti-atheist rant in response to the upcoming Reason rally, where smart people actually get together in Washington and have a rally. So he's against that. And I want to break down some of his absurd Twitter rant for you guys so that you can laugh at him. Isn't that fun? It's always fun to laugh at Ken Ham. He thinks he's laughing at us, but in reality, we are laughing at him. So, without further ado, let's get started here. And Hillary Clinton is first up, and it ain't good, man. This is something that her camp should be freaking out about. I don't know if they are, but they should be. Okay, here we go. I told you this was going to happen, and now it is. Look at the new Republican ad against Hillary Clinton for the general election.
Speeches to the biggest banks on Wall Street after one of the worst financial crises in American history. But Hillary won't tell us what she said to those banks. We'll pay her over $1 million. And are contributing millions more to elect her. So before you promise your vote to Hillary, don't you deserve to know what she promised them? Future 45 is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. If the Republicans and Donald Trump continue to run attack ads like this, they will win. I have no doubt that they will win. And when you go to the Hillary supporters for a counterargument, they say crickets, nothing. How do you respond to that? You can't respond to that. You want to know why? It's true. That's 100% correct. In fact, if I was running Bernie Sanders' campaign, I would have ran ads like that all day long. And then naturally what they'll do, since they have no logical counterpoint and counterargument, they'll pivot and say, oh, but Bernie Sanders is the one who fucking caused this because he brought it up originally, and now the Republicans are running with it. So goddamn Bernie Sanders, there he goes, ruining it for the Democrats in the general election. No, Bernie Sanders did not make
Hillary Clinton go give speeches to big banks and get rich off of it. She chose to do that. So you can't blame Bernie Sanders for the corrupt actions that Hillary Clinton took on her own. She made that decision. If you're really angry about it, perhaps you should be mad at her for going to do it in the first place. And for anybody who would claim that, well, I mean, this has no effect on her in any way, shape, or form, you're a ridiculous human being. Like, nobody should take you seriously. You should be dismissed. You should be laughed at. I don't know about everybody listening here, but if somebody gives me $675,000 to give a couple speeches, I tend to like them. I'm probably going to answer that phone call if they give me a ringy-ding-ding when I'm in the White House. And this is the way our politics works today. It's open corruption, open bribery. And this, like I haven't even brought up, this is just direct speeches where Hillary Clinton took the money and put it in her own pocket. We haven't even brought up the amount of money that she takes for her campaign and the amount of money that she's taken for her various super PACs and the amount of money that the family has taken for the Clinton Foundation. When you look at all of the fundraising that the Clinton family has done over all their years in politics, you know what the number comes to? $3 billion. And you're naive enough to think that they care about a grandma in Wyoming? They don't give a fuck about that grandma. She hasn't paid her bribes. They're much more likely to listen to Goldman Sachs and Wall Street bankers. So this is, she is the establishment. She is super connected to every wealthy individual and donor on the planet. And yes, there is evidence she has changed her votes as a result of it. There's quite a bit of evidence for it. For example, she used to be in favor of single payer. After the health insurance companies got their paws on her and donated a tremendous amount of money to her, all of a sudden, she flipped. She no longer supports single payer. Look at that. Absolutely, that had to do with the money. Hey, you play ball, we'll donate to you. Okay, no problem. So in her mind, she might rationalize it and say, well, I'm still in favor of some kind of reform, and I'll help the people, but also I got to help my donors, because my donors, I mean, these are Americans too, and we have a big tent party, so I need to please everybody. Let's not do single payer. Let's do, for example, something like the Affordable Care Act, which keeps the private health insurance system intact, but still is some kind of reform. This is how they rationalize it. There was a bankruptcy bill that basically made it so that bankruptcies were massively biased in favor of big companies. And at first she was against that. After she ran for Senate and became a senator and got a lot of money from these companies, all of a sudden she flipped. Now she's on the side of the bankruptcy bill, which massively rigs the process in favor of big companies. And, you know, the list goes on and on. I mean, there's so many examples of how she's changed her vote, how she's sold out to companies. So when I look at that ad, I just see something that's true. And the sad thing is that the state of affairs today is such that many Hillary supporters and many Democratic loyalists, they'll see this and they'll go, oh, that's run by Republicans, and then they'll go into automatic defense mode because it's run by Republicans and party loyalty, and we're on Team Democrat, Unite Blue, so let's argue for this side. But wait a second. The substance of the ad is correct. It is correct. Forget the source. They might be wrong about everything else, but they're saying 2 plus 2 equals 4, so this is true. And I think the main point is, if the Republicans and Donald Trump, if they run ads like this and hammer away on this angle of Hillary Clinton, none of the bullshit scandals, but this angle, you are going to suppress the Democratic base. Bernie, of course, has the heart of the Democratic base. You're going to suppress them from going to vote for her. So you're going to make it so that some of them will go out and vote for Jill Stein. Some of them will go out and write in Bernie Sanders' name. A very small percentage of them might go out and vote for Donald Trump because they want to blow the system up. But that's what will happen. So you're going to suppress the vote. And also, by the way, ads like this, I think it affects independents, and it makes independents not want to vote for her either. So she's going to lose her base, and she's going to lose independents. And then the turnout will be low in the election. And then whenever there's a low turnout in an election, which party usually wins? The Republicans. So for everybody today that's like, Hillary Clinton's certainly going to be president, like the joke at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. You know, it's my last speech when Obama said this. It's my last speech, and we don't know who'll be up here next year. It's anybody's guess who she'll be. And everybody's like, ha, 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 of course Hillary's going to win. Ha, 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 ha. you guys don't get it. The sentiment and the feeling among regular people against the establishment is overwhelming. And Hillary Clinton is the establishment through and through. And ads like this are just true, and they point to that. So is this going to hurt her? You bet your ass it's going to hurt her. Way more than any nonsense scandals like Benghazi or shit like that. This is real. This is real, and it's true, and it's my job to tell you that regardless of, you know, where that points to in terms of party loyalty. See, on this show, we don't give a fuck about so-called party loyalty. I'm going to give you the facts no matter what. And the substance of that ad is just correct. That could be damaging if they keep running ads like this. Woo, diggums. It's gonna be a bumpy general election, man, I'm telling you. Okay. Now, let's move on here, and we'll attack the other jackass, Donald Trump. Law News wrote an article about how Donald Trump apparently sued The Onion in 2013. This guy's unbelievable. So for the six of you who are somehow unaware, The Onion is probably the most well-known satirical news site in the world. Donald Trump was so offended by a piece of theirs that he literally sued them. And what happened is they wrote an article from Donald Trump titled, "When you're feeling low, just remember I'll be dead in about 15 or 20 years." And then obviously it goes on, and it makes these points about how unlikable he is. And that's true even today, even though he has a Republican nomination. His unfavorables are fucking sky high. So, you know, the article at the time in 2013, it was hilarious. Not a single person who read it thought Donald Trump actually wrote it. It's clearly satire. But what happened in response? Well, The Onion got this letter, quote, "To The Onion, I wish to call your attention to an article currently on your homepage allegedly penned by Donald Trump entitled, 'When you're feeling low, just remember I'll be dead in about 15 to 20 years.' Let me begin by stating the obvious. The commentary was not written by Donald Trump. The article is an absolutely disgusting piece that lacks any place in journalism, even in your Onion. I'm hereby demanding that you immediately remove this disgraceful piece from your website and apologize to Mr. Trump. I further ask you that you contact me immediately to discuss this commentary. This commentary goes way beyond defamation, and if it's not removed, I will take all actions to ensure that your actions will not go without consequences. Guide yourself accordingly." What the fuck is wrong with this guy? Now, they claim, well, that article was written by his attorney. No, you know who it was written by? Donald Trump. You know how you can tell? Everything is super Trumpian, how he wrote it. So this guy sits around all day, and by the way, he does this today, too. There's reports about this, how he just sits around and reads everything he can possibly read in the media about himself. He was doing it back then, too. He stumbles across The Onion. I don't know whether he thought it was satirical or he didn't, and he didn't care. I don't know. Whatever the case is, he was so outraged and offended by this piece on him that he sued them. Now, not only that, he sued Bill Maher. Bill Maher's spoken about this before. He made a joke about, you know how Trump was a birther, actually is still a birther, about President Obama. And he keeps asking, okay, let me see your college transcripts, let me see this, let me see that. But, you know, Obama's proved a million times over that he was, of course, born in Hawaii, which is in the United States of America. Trump doesn't believe it. Let me see this, let me see that, let me see your college transcripts. So what does Maher do? He goes out there and he says, prove to me that you're not the love child of an orangutan and a human. And then he shows a picture because the hair on the orangutan is close to the color of his actual hair. So he makes that. What does Donald Trump do? He goes and shows his birth certificate and says, see, an orangutan is not my father. And he sues Maher and takes him to court. And he wants to take, I don't know what it was, $1 million or something like that from him. And he's like, I proved it. Therefore, now you need to give me money, and I'm going to sue you to make sure you never speak about me like this again. Okay, that's incredible. Now, we have a clear case of this guy suing people for freedom of speech and satire, which is crazy. And then also, he's not backing down. He went on to say recently at a rally we covered at the time, quote, "I'm going to open up our libel laws." Which means anytime anybody anywhere offends me and says something I don't like and you insult me, I am going to make it so that I can sue your punk ass and win. This guy is like fucking Erdogan in Turkey. He's the most anti-First Amendment candidate I've ever seen in my entire life. He doesn't give a fuck about the Constitution and about freedom of speech and freedom of expression and freedom to protest. He does not care. Which gets to the main point about this story. You know, oftentimes we hear from the right, and to be clear about this, I actually totally agree with them on this point. You have this certain segment on the right that's anti-PC. And, you know, anti-PC means every time there's some sort of joke about minorities or something, and then liberals get all up in arms and they say, that's offensive and that's insensitive and you shouldn't say that. You have these people on the right who go, pipe down, dipshit. You know, it is a free country. We get to say whatever we want. If you don't like the joke, don't listen to the fucking comedy, but move along. All of your joke outrage is fucking childish and petulant. So we have people who say that, but then all of a sudden we have a Republican, a right-wing candidate for president, who not only gets offended by jokes, he sues people for jokes. He wants to literally censor them, ban them from doing jokes about topics that he deems off-limits. So if you're somebody who's anti-PC, you have to be against Donald Trump. I mean, he goes beyond joke outrage, and I'm offensive, and that's insensitive. He'll literally try to ban you from saying things he doesn't like. So if you're somebody who's part of the anti-PC crowd, and to be clear, the anti-PC crowd stretches from people on the left. You know, I'd argue somebody like Bill Maher is anti-PC. I'd argue, oh, I'm totally anti-PC. And it stretches all the way to the right. There's, you know, people like Milo Yiannopoulos, Steven Crowder, fucking Ann Coulter likes to pretend she's anti-PC. In reality, she's just anti-correctness, not political correctness. She's just wrong about everything. But, you know, this is a broad crowd, a broad group we're talking about where, hey, these are people who say, fuck your joke outrage. I don't care if you're offended or if you think something is insensitive. Get the fuck over it. All of those people, if any of them actually support Trump, and they do, they are the biggest fucking hypocrites on planet Earth. Apparently, you hate joke outrage unless it's from the right, in which case you can sue the Onion if you want to, and I'll still support you, be totally against the Constitution and the First Amendment, or you can sue Bill Maher, you could sue anybody, fuck them. If you're on team right wing, then it's cool to be politically correct. Then it's cool to be outraged and to say, that's insensitive and I'm offended. No, 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 no. I'm against the joke outrage and the oversensitivity on both sides all the time. You guys, on the other hand, are total and utter hypocrites. So don't tell me you're anti-PC. You're no such fucking thing. If you actually were anti-PC, you would immediately come out and rip Donald Trump for this and say you can't support him, but you won't do that. Okay. All right, that was awesome. If I don't say so myself. I got worked up there, but it felt good to get that out. I can't stand, like, the anti-PC people who are somehow only anti-PC when it comes to left-wing PC police. And they exist, by the way. Don't get me wrong. Like, anytime we talk about safe spaces on college campuses and microaggressions and, oh, you protect my feelings. okay, trigger warnings, all that stuff. Shut the fuck up. You're not, you know, you think you're some sort of, you know, ideologically pure left-winger. You're not. You're actually authoritarian left. So you want to, like, control people, but you also happen to be in favor of raising the minimum wage, and you want to, you know, you're in favor of some good things like universal health care. Well, you know, it's not just people on the left who have that authoritarian streak in them. In fact, authoritarianism historically has been much more on the right, you know, whether it's from religious lunatics, all right-wing. You know, whether it's from somebody like the strongman personality like we see from Donald Trump, but they love it. There's some people who are anti-PC. They all of a sudden love it when the guy who's PC is on their side. Okay. All right, let me do one more. I have time for one more before our first break. And we're going to go to Ted Cruz. Get ready to laugh. Ted Cruz released another political ad after losing the Republican primary. Let's watch.
Women who have been assembled here. It is the finest team in politics I've ever seen, I suspect, has ever come together. Everyone here has poured your hearts into this journey. You have poured your passions. People have given sacrificially. The promise we made to you at the beginning, 13 months ago, I said, listen, I don't know if we'll win or lose. I think we'll win. But I can promise you nobody's going to outwork us. And at the end of the day, you will look in the mirror and be proud of having been part of this team. What we accomplished is frankly insane. Nobody thought we had a prayer. But what we did collectively here is we sparked a fire and started a movement. And that's powerful, and it doesn't go away with one election. Ronald Reagan in 1976 came up short. I suspect at that convention there were more than a few tears shed. It's going to be our task to go forward and continue fighting for that. It has been the greatest honor of my life to be in this foxhole 20, 30, 40 years from now. People in this room, people across this country, will say I was part of this. Am I sad? Yes. But I also know that collectively we did everything we could. We left everything on the field.
I have so much to say about this. First, that cheesy music is insufferable. Like, they're trying to evoke this overly emotional and sensitive feeling from you, like, oh, he's such a hero, and he had to drop out because he wasn't going to win, and I want him to win so badly. Oh, this, if I feel like I'm on a sitcom, listen to this music. It's the ending of a sitcom that just ended in a somber way. Oh, the movie of our lives. Ted Cruz, we love you. What are you doing with that music, man? I can't stand, like, the overly produced. You know, it's obvious, it's so Hollywood, which is hilarious from somebody like Ted Cruz who, you know, claims like, oh, Hollywood liberals, we're against that. Okay, you're one of the fakest politicians there is, and that says a lot. There are a lot of fucking fake politicians. With your smarmy tone and cadence and rhythm, and, you know, another thing I noticed about Ted Cruz recently is the awkward pauses. Like, why do you, he pauses at times in his speeches when it just makes no sense. You know, I want to tell everybody something about how great you've been. Like, why are you pausing there? Why are you pausing there? It makes no sense to pause there. Stop pausing there. It's all so produced. It's so annoying. Okay, but anyway, putting aside the style angle of this, as if there's any actual substance. But anyway, I told you. I told you he was going to run again. The day he dropped out, the very next show we did, I came out here and I said, write it in fucking stone. The dude is going to run again. And then I also made another prediction. I said he will get his ass handed to him. He will do significantly worse in the next election. But in his mind, and this is what's so sad about this, he actually thinks like, no, I'm going to get him next time. He said in this little goofy ad here, and actually it wasn't little. It went on for over 5 minutes. I had to cut it down for you guys. It's a lot more the cheesy music and everybody the feels and I'm crying. He says, it doesn't go away with one election cycle. I wonder what that means. I wonder if that means he's going to run again in another cycle. I can't figure it out. And then he says, of course. You know, Reagan came up short in 1976. They alluded to the fact that when he picked Carly Fiorina, that, you know, it was about, I think Ronald Reagan was the only other person to pick a VP that early. So, again, he was, like, trying to copy Reagan. Dude, you're so sad. Like, he really thinks he's the next Reagan. And then he says, 20 to 30 to 40 years from now, people will say, I was a part of this. Okay, hold on. Why would people say 20 to 30 to 40 years from now? Why wouldn't they just say it in a year? Why wouldn't they just say it now? Why wouldn't they say it in 2 years? Because 20 to 30 to 40 years from now is going to be, in his mind, after I run again, after I become president, and then 20 to 30 to 40 years from now, people will look back and go, oh, remember when he ran the first time we were on his campaign and he lost? But then it all worked out because then he came in, and then he won, and then he made changed America into Jesus Stand. God, Ted, you're so, so sad. And then, of course, the biggest giveaway is at the end of the ad. It says, to be continued. To be continued how? Why? When? It's because you're fucking running again. And by the way, I'm not, like, it sounds like I'm tooting my own horn here. I'm not. Anybody could figure out that he's running again. It's literally right in front of you. Perhaps I called it before other people called it, but now he's letting you know. And that's the other really, really sad aspect of this is, dude, he can't help himself. Like, you know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of somebody who goes in to negotiate for a car or a house or whatever it is, and you say, whatever, let's say the purchase price of the car is $30,000, and you say, I'll offer $26,000, and they go, $29,990. You go, okay, but I'll buy it. Where do I sign? Where do I sign? So they just it took like $10 off the price. You're like, okay, I have a boner for this, so let me sign. That's Ted Cruz. He just gets his ass handed to him, and like, as soon as the election's over, and people are just not that into you. That's why you lost, dipshit. What does he do? I'm going to run again, don't worry. I will run again. I promise I'll run again. Are you going to vote for me? Because I'm going to run again. I'm telling you I'm going to run again. I just want everybody to know I'm going to run again. So I'm going to run. I want to be president. I want to be president so bad I want to be president. Dude, that's not how you do it. That's not how you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to go away and say, oh, you know, I don't think I'm going to run again. It was very taxing, but let me tell you how great the American people are and how much I learned from them and, you know, how I've taken away many valuable life lessons, but, oh, gosh, I'm going to have to go away into the wilderness for a while and not run, and I have no ambitions of running anymore, so I just want everybody to know that. So everybody, you go away, people forget about you, and then however much further in the future, all of a sudden, you drop a little hint or something. You know, hey, I'm not running, but I'm very interested and I'm really worried about the direction the country's going. And then you build it back up, and eventually you say you're running again, and then everybody's, you know, all of your idiot base is like, yeah, oh, he's running again. But the way you do it now, everybody knows, oh, Ted Cruz is running again. So now you're a checkmark yes, and then nobody knows who else is fucking running. But then when they decide to run, they're going to get all the news coverage because everybody knows your punk ass is in. Dude, you have no idea what you're doing. It's the saddest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, he ran his entire campaign like he was trying to appeal to, you know, 1953 segregated Mississippi. Like, his entire campaign, liberal values, New York values suck. Yeah, let me tell you that. And fucking uber over-the-top religiosity and just so smarmy in how he talks. And he thinks, yet again, I don't know how, that, oh, I'm just going to run the same way the next time around, and this time I'll win because I'm totally like Reagan. No, you're not, and you're not going to win. It's actually really sad to watch, you know, his delusions of grandeur in front of our eyes when he falls so, so short in every imaginable way. So I'm saying it now again. Record this. Save it. Write it in stone. Ted Cruz not only is going to run again, it's a guarantee he's going to run again, but he will also get his ass handed to him, and he'll do significantly worse than he did this time around. Okay, I got to take a break. When we come back, I got a lot of great stuff, including a new Gallup poll on healthcare, and David Petraeus has something to say about anti-Muslim bigotry. What? Seems like a weird source for that. Stay right there. We'll talk about all that and much more.
explain to say how painful the hangover was today. In front of the toilet, hands and knees, trying to breathe in between the dry heaves. My baby made me some coffee, afraid that if I drink some, it's probably coming right back at me. Couple of Advil, relax and chill, at a standstill with how bad I feel. I think I need to smell fresh air, so I stepped out the back door and fell down the stairs. Sunlight hit me dead in the eye, like it's mad that I gave half the day to last night. A bad sight made me trip on my ass right into that patch of grass, like that's life. All of a sudden, I realized something. The weather is amazing, even the birds are bumping. Stood up and took a look and a breath, and there's that bike that I forgot that I possessed. Never really seen exercise as friendly, but I think something's telling me to ride that 10 speed. Brakes are broken, that's alright. The tires got air and the chain seems tight. Hot on, it felt the summertime. It reminds me of one of them moose sob lines. Like sunshine, sunshine is fine. Feel it in my skin, warming up my mind. Don't you gotta give in to win. I love the days when it shines. Whoa, let it shine. Sunshine, sunshine is fine. Feel it in my skin, warming up my mind. Don't you gotta give in to win. I love the days when it shines. Whoa, let it shine. Whoa, let it shine. Whoa, let it shine. Whoa, let it shine. Whoa, let it. If I could, I would keep this feeling in a plastic jar. Bust it out whenever someone's acting hard. Settle down, barbecue in the backyard. The kids get treats and old folks get classic cars. Every day the gift to pass is a success. And every woman looks better in a sundress. Sunshine's an excuse to shoot loose, get juice, show improvement moves and let loose. I hear voices, I see smiles to match them. Good times and you can feel it in the fashion. Even though the heat cooks up the action, the streets still got butterflies, enough kids to catch them. Riding my bike around these lakes, man, feeling like I finally figured out my escape plan. Take it all in, the day started off all wrong, but somehow now that hangover is all gone. Ain't nothing like the sound of the leaves when the breeze penetrates these outside trees. Leaning up against one, watching the vibe, forgetting all about the stress, thanking God I'm alive. It's so simple, I had to keep the song simple. And when I get home, I'm gonna open all the windows. Feeling alright, stopped out a stop sign, the car pulled up, bumping Fresh Prince of Summertime. Summer, summer, summer. Feel it in my skin, warming up my mind. Don't you gotta give in to win. I love the days when it shines. Whoa, let it shine. Sunshine, sunshine is fine. Feel it in my skin, warming up my mind. Don't you gotta give in to win. I love the days when it shines.
All right, we're back, guys. Let's talk a little bit about Larry Wilmore. By the way, the shirt I'm wearing today is a mess. It's a disaster. It hasn't been ironed since roughly 1972, and the collar's all fucked up. So I'm going to look like a mess on YouTube. All right, here we go. So Larry Wilmore did a great job at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He was pretty much fearless in prodding the powerful and making an ass of them. I don't think anybody's done this good of a job since Stephen Colbert. And it's like he went into it knowing he was going to bomb, and he was okay with that because he was kind of playing to the audience at home more than in the room, because the people in the room are stuck-up pricks. So one of his biggest targets was CNN. He did a bunch of jokes about them. He made a drone joke to Obama, and then he said, speaking of drones, Wolf Blitzer, you know, ask a follow-up question, dude. Here's who's winning. Nobody who watches the Situation Room. and Wolf Blitzer was sitting there stone-faced. He also made a joke about Don Lemon. He said, some of the best black journalists in the country are in this room tonight, and also Don Lemon. Don, alleged journalist Don Lemon, everybody. And he just fucking ripped CNN to pieces. So it was a beautiful thing to watch. And again, I find it funny when people were tweeting at me saying, well, he wasn't funny. Well, no, you probably only believe that because you're going based off the reaction in the room. And admittedly, the reaction in the room was, fuck you, and it's like he bombed. But he wasn't necessarily playing to that room because he was really being harsh on them. So I think he was more playing to the audience at home and the people who would, you know, get it and be like, yeah, fuck these people. They are assholes, and they do have problems. CNN is an absolute joke nowadays. So they didn't like that very much. And we have a story that came out yesterday about how he's now banned from CNN. Oh, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life. So CNN is apparently like Donald Trump. You said something I don't like. I will now ban you. I will censor you from being anywhere in my vicinity. So what happened was Don Lemon, to his credit, you know, he thought it was all in good fun. So he invited on Larry Wilmore to his show to talk about the so-called controversy that followed after Larry Wilmore ended his bit by saying the N-word. People on the right were feigning outrage, like, oh, how dare you say that word? I'm so offended. Wait, you guys are never offended by it. Now all of a sudden you're supposedly offended by it. Why? Because it's a liberal black guy who said it. And in the vicinity of the president, how dare you? Right, because I'm sure you guys have cared so much about Obama's feelings all along. What a joke it was. So it's just fake outrage. But Don Lemon was going to talk to Wilmore about it on his show, and a producer stepped in at the last second and said, nope. Guys, they've become a parody of themselves. If you prod them too much and you offend them and if you hurt their feelings, that's it. That's it. You're off. You're off. And you know what I couldn't get out of my head after reading this story is, oh, we're going to beat them. Like, don't get me wrong, as of right now, we're already kind of beating them in some ways. So, you know, I think it was a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, we compared the numbers of secular talk on a daily, so for a regular day, a full day, because that's the only way you can get the numbers for YouTube, versus Wolf Blitzer. At the time, he had a two-hour block in the middle of the day. So we compare, I think it was the key demo, which is, you know, the money-making demographic, you know, young to middle-aged people. We beat Wolf Blitzer in that demo. So we're already kind of beating them in some ways. But now, I mean, forget it. If this is how you act, like, oh, somebody said something slightly controversial that pokes fun at us, therefore you're banned and you're not allowing, we're not allowing you on the air here. Oh, you're so done. I mean, we are going to crush you. We're going to fucking run laps around you. Why would you do that? Because they're all, you know, little prima donnas, and, oh, my feelings were hurt because you said something true. And at the end of the day, it's almost like they're acting like state-owned media. That's another thing I couldn't get out of my head. Like, people make fun of RT and make fun of other outlets. They're like, oh, yeah, well, that's owned by that government. So, obviously, they're going to be biased, and they're going to act ridiculous. Well, in the U.S., it's not like our media isn't owned by establishment elitist pricks. They're gigantic corporations, for fuck's sake. So if the overlords at said corporation have decided to banish you from the airwaves, well, they fucking do it. And you were a little too hard on CNN. Therefore, you are banished. You are dismissed from the club, from the inside circle here where we all circle jerk each other because we're so powerful and rich. Now you are dismissed from that club. We let you in for a second to do your, you know, your White House correspondence dinner speech, but you didn't show sufficient deference to us, the powerful, the mighty people. So word came down from the top of CNN, management and CNN, passed it on to the executive producer. They tell Don Lemon, I know it's your show, but I'm not allowing you to do this. And that's where we are today. And also, guys, think about it. Most of the people they've hired because these are people who are not going to rock the boat. And they're not going to question the establishment, and they're not going to go after the fundamental structure and the problems in the structure of the system. So that's why, for example, you have guys like Anderson Cooper. Not just to single out Anderson, because he's just one of many problems over at CNN. But Anderson Cooper said, he said to Howard Stern, "I don't vote." Howard's like, "That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. Why don't you vote?" He's like, "Well, you know, I wouldn't want to be more in favor of one candidate than another candidate as a journalist and a reporter, so I don't vote." So his philosophy of journalism is he's letting you know, neutrality no matter what. Not objectivity, which is different. Objectivity is telling the truth no matter what, no matter how black and white or partisan it may be. No, he's saying neutrality no matter what. So it's always 50-50. The Republicans always half right. The Democrat is always half right. No, you can never say this person's right, this person's wrong. Therefore, evolution versus creationism, I don't know. I don't know. It's 50-50. Let's debate it. You know, you name it. Hey, did the Bush tax cuts work? I don't know. Have two people on, we'll debate it. Hey, was the Iraq war good? I don't know. Let's have two people on, we'll debate it. 50-50, 50-50. That's who they want on the air there, because they don't want anybody questioning the establishment and the elites, rocking the boat and saying, hey, you know, iceberg dead ahead. We got fucking problems here, man. Money has totally corrupted our political process. Our government is now owned by big corporations. Oh, you can't say that when you're working for a big corporation, a media corporation at that. So, and they know, man, they know. That's why Wolf Blitzer is where he is. That's why Anderson Cooper is where he is. It's their philosophy of journalism that allows them to be there, because people in power know they're not going to pull a Larry Wilmore. They're not going to get out there and say, this is all bullshit. This is all bullshit. I'm not allowed to be objective. I'm not allowed to really do truth-telling. They know they won't do that. That's why they have those positions. But Larry Wilmore, oh, he was in that inner circle. But then they realized, hey, you're not sufficiently with us, even though his fucking job was to make jokes. And now they go, no, now you're done. Now you're done. And also, final point I'll make on this is people oftentimes, and I think rightfully so, they'll get mad at the left when the left does PC joke outrage. Oh, I'm offended. Oh, that's insensitive. People go, get the fuck over it. This is freedom of speech, you know, free expression. They could say what they want. You don't like the jokes, don't fucking listen. Wouldn't CNN be doing PC outrage here? They're offended. They're being overly sensitive. So now they're banning somebody from their airwaves because, oh, you hurt my feelings. So I want to hear the same cries of this is PC outrage directed at CNN, this major corporation. But that's not going to happen, because the only time you're allowed to make PC criticism is when it's against the left. If it's PC outrage from the right, or if it's PC outrage from a giant multinational corporation and the establishment and elites, nobody says anything about it. Well, Larry, you did a good job, and don't listen to these jackasses. And by the way, we don't need them anymore. It used to be the case that you needed them for access. You don't need them anymore. Now we have the internet. Now we have new media. You think they'd ever let a guy like me on? Never. Never. They would never. So what do? That's fine. I'll go around you. I'm more entertaining than you, and I'm more informative than you any day of the week, so I'll go around you, and I'll build a giant audience that will eventually beat your fucking audience. That's what we're doing now, and they can't fucking stop us, because they are the horse and buggy, and we are the automobile. We're just superior. Now we go to Gallup. Gallup has a new poll out on the issue of healthcare, and shocker, the American people want what every other modern nation has. So they say, quote, presented with three separate scenarios for the future of the Affordable Care Act, 58% of U.S. adults favor the idea of replacing the law with a federally funded healthcare system that provides insurance for all Americans. At the same time, Americans are split on the idea of maintaining the ACA as it is, with 48% in favor and 49% opposed. The slight majority, 51%, favor repealing the act. Isn't that incredible? So if you listen to the establishment media and you listen to Hillary Clinton's campaign, and obviously if you listen to the people on the right, they will tell you things that are not true. So the people on the right will say, oh, the American people hate Obamacare, they want to get rid of Obamacare, and we know that for sure. Well, they're giving you half the picture there. A slight majority, 51%, want to repeal it. But then what those guys want to replace it with is Jesus and prayer. They want to go back to the system we had before, which was worse, where more people die because they don't have access to basic health care and more people are uninsured. So they're 100% wrong in what they think should happen. Now, Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, what is she in favor of? Well, it's mostly anybody's guess. It depends what day of the week you catch her. But mostly she says this vague add-on to Obamacare. Okay, what does that mean? It's hilarious that people have attacked Bernie Sanders. He's not giving sufficient detail on his single-payer plan. She's not giving any detail on her plan. I don't know, I want to do a vague add-on to Obamacare or something. And then at times she's like, I guess public option, maybe? She's only saying that because Bernie pushed her to the left, because Bernie's eating her lunch on this issue. But usually it's, I don't know, add on to Obamacare by doing something. What do you want to do? I don't know, just add on to it. Okay, what does that mean? I don't know, just add on to it. Well, it turns out the American people aren't with any of that shit. What they're really with, 58%, a strong majority, they're in favor of replacing Obamacare with a federally funded healthcare system that provides insurance for all Americans. That is single payer. That is Medicare for all. So, yet again, when you give the American people the option of being like all the other modern nations and catching up with them, they go, yeah, of course I want to do that. So it's always ridiculous when people smugly assert, well, this is a center-right country, or this is a centrist country, or that's too radical a plan. The American people would never be in favor of that. They're telling you they are in favor of that. You want to know why? Because that's not radical. You're radical if you want to keep it as it is right now, or just do tweaks around the edges to try to make it better. 45,000 people die every year because they don't have access to basic health care in this country. That's radical. It's not radical to do a single-payer system where everybody gets covered. That's the norm in the modern world. And all you have to do is, you can pay for it in 17,000 different ways, but they always go, too expensive, too expensive. All you have to do is reallocate some funds. For fuck's sake, the Iraq war, when all is said and done there, it'll cost $7 trillion. I haven't heard anybody say, we can't afford it. We can't afford killing innocent people overseas. No, that, everybody shut up, no questions asked, just blow shit up. When it comes to healthcare, oh, we can't afford it. Healthcare and college, it's always, we can't afford it, we can't afford it. When it comes to war, when it comes to corporate welfare, when it comes to pork barrel spending, mum's the word. Nobody's pinching pennies anymore. Splurge all you want. Unbelievable. So now we know. All of your bullshit pontificating, if you're in the establishment media, or if you're a right-winger, or if you're a Democratic loyalist hack, a pro-Hillary person, now we know all of you are wrong. The numbers are here. By the way, the number used to be 51% in favor of a single-payer system. Now it got kicked up to 58%. Why? Why did that happen? Well, I don't know. Has there been any prominent figure on the political stage that's been advocating for single-payer in an aggressive way? Oh, right. Bernie Sanders has been doing that. And yet again, what this shows is when you take the right positions and you make an argument for it, people go, oh, yeah, that makes much more sense than anybody else. So I would argue that even the few liberal positions that are not popular today, again, remember, most of them are, but the few that are not, all you need is somebody to make an effective argument for it, and people go, that's the way we got to go. So don't listen to the establishment Democrats. Don't listen to the right-wingers. Don't listen to the establishment media. This is what people want, and they're right to want it, because we are getting screwed way more than any other modern nation, and we shouldn't stand for it anymore. Okay. All right, one more before we take our final break here, and it'll be David Petraeus. General David Petraeus wrote an article in the Washington Post titled, Anti-Muslim Bigotry Aids Islamist Terrorists. So that's an interesting headline. Let's see what he has to say. Quote, I have grown increasingly concerned about inflammatory political discourse that has become far too common, both at home and abroad, against Muslims and Islam, including proposals from various quarters for blanket discrimination against people on the basis of their religion. Some justify these measures as necessary to keep us safe, dismissing any criticism as political correctness. Others play down such divisive rhetoric as the excesses of political campaigns here and in Europe, which will fade away after the elections are over. I fear that neither is true. In fact, the ramifications of such rhetoric could be very harmful and lasting. those who flirt with hate speech against Muslims should realize they are playing directly into the hands of Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. The terrorists' explicit hope has been to try to provoke a clash of civilizations, telling Muslims that the United States is at war with them and their religion. When Western politicians propose blanket discrimination against Islam, they bolster the terrorist propaganda. At the same time, such statements directly undermine our ability to defeat Islamist extremists by alienating and undermining the allies whose help we most need to win this fight, namely Muslims. Okay, so that's an adult's analysis, and that's all true. But I have to say in response here, you know what else is true? You know what else plays directly into the hands of Al-Qaeda, as he literally said there? Quote, it plays directly into the hands of Al-Qaeda. Two other things do that. Number one, the Iraq War, in which you orchestrated and carried out the surge, which probably created many more terrorists, including ISIS. You laid the political groundwork for them to actually be successful and gain more territorial success. And also, arming them. Arming Al-Qaeda would help Al-Qaeda. You know who floated the idea of arming Al-Qaeda? David Petraeus. It was such a crazy idea that other advisors in the room were like, what the fuck did this guy just say? He wanted to arm Al-Qaeda in Syria so that Al-Qaeda could fight ISIS. Look, it's one thing to want Al-Qaeda and ISIS to fight. I want Al-Qaeda and ISIS to fight, and they would, if there wasn't a unifying force in the region for them to come together and fight against, namely us. But you let them fight each other without giving them weapons! Why would you give Al-Qaeda weapons? You act like, well, you know, it's not like there's the potential for them to eventually turn it on us. Of course there is! They attacked us on 9/11, you idiot! Also, Reagan armed Mujahideen to fight the Soviet Union back in the 1980s. And what happened? Well, the Mujahideen later broke up into the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and then they used those weapons against us. So what a preposterous idea! As he lectures people about, you know, hey, come on now, you don't want to aid, Islamic terrorists here, do you? Get your shit together. Dude, you literally wanted to arm Al-Qaeda. That would be direct aid to Islamic terrorists. What is wrong with you? So yeah, I can't take this guy seriously, but you know why he wrote this article, right? He wrote this article because, as we discussed recently, he's Team Hillary. So he's Team Hillary. By the way, Hillary is a massive interventionist and a gigantic war hawk. He's Team Hillary, so he's trying to find arguments to snub Trump. So what's the number one way to do it? Well, I don't know. Talk about he does generalize about all Muslims. He is bigoted. So let me talk about, oh, my God, generalizing against all Muslims is so bad and bigoted, and you're going to help Al-Qaeda. Yeah, but you help Al-Qaeda too, you idiot. Again, it's true that Trump's absurd generalization and demonization and bigotry does help aid extremism. There's no doubt about it. But Petraeus does too, and perhaps in even more direct ways, when you literally wanted to arm Al-Qaeda. That's worse. That's about as bad as it gets. When you were in charge at one point in Iraq, at another point in Afghanistan, at another point in the head of the CIA, nobody should take you seriously about limiting terrorism around the world. There's no doubt that you made it worse. When you kill so many civilians in the Middle East, when you do this unnecessary surge, you unify the opposition and you create more terrorists. But again, that right over his head, because he can't admit that, right? He can't bring up, okay, look, I was in Iraq, I kind of led it there and we fucked up in so many ways. He can't admit that, because if he admits that, then what are you doing? You're also admitting, Hillary's got problems too, because Hillary voted for the Iraq War. So perhaps she's equally responsible to the rise in extremism when you vote for a disastrous war that broke the region, toppled the strongman, and made it so all the people who were behind the strongman, namely the Baathists, Saddam's party, they teamed up with religious fundamentalists and they became ISIS. You can't admit that, because if you admit that, then the person you favor for president, well, she has massive problems too. So instead, don't discuss that. Don't discuss Iraq and the issues there. Don't discuss how stupid it is and how much it aids terrorists to arm terrorists, because you wanted to do that. Just say, oh, you said the wrong words. Anti-Muslim bigotry. Oh, you're helping them so bad. Yeah, that's true. But the source it's coming from is not a legit source. I mean, again, this is like Dick Cheney lecturing people on morality. Bitch, step aside. You got nothing to say on the matter that makes any goddamn sense at all. You're one of the most immoral people we know. Well, same with David Petraeus. This guy is a joke. This guy is a clown. Anybody who floats the idea of arming Al-Qaeda should be immediately dismissed from U.S. political discourse, and nobody should take them seriously. But instead, now he's coming out and he's pontificating on what helps, Al-Qaeda. I think arming them would be the number one thing that helps them, and you supported that. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Ken Ham decided to launch into an anti-atheist rant. We'll talk about that. And we have a sad story coming out of Denmark that I'm going to share with you guys. And a naked protest in front of the RNC. What's that about? Well, we'll discuss that too. Stay right there, guys.
All right, welcome back, people.
Okay, Ken Ham. Here we go. Let's talk about him. Creationist Ken Ham decided to launch into an anti-atheist rant in response to the upcoming Reason Rally. That gets under his skin that intelligent people will be in Washington standing up for things that make sense. So his rant here is hilarious. He says, "Atheists believe the universe and life arose by natural processes. That's their religion. It's a blind faith religion. It's an anti-God religion." Okay, where do I begin with this? So, atheists believe, or atheists say, it is most likely at this moment, based on the evidence, that the universe came about as a result of the Big Bang. Now, outside of that, do we claim to have any knowledge we don't have? No. Okay, atheists and agnostics are the first people to admit when they don't know, when they don't have an answer. Hey, the evidence isn't in on that. Hey, the proof isn't in on that. I'm not sure, man. I'm not sure. If you ask me a question I don't know the answer to, I'm not going to make it up. I'm going to go, oh, I don't know. So it's hilarious that they take the truth and they flip it on its head. The people who are most humble in the face of the nature of reality, the people who don't pretend to know shit when they don't know, all of a sudden now they're derided as, it's a religion. It's a blind faith religion. Okay, it is literally the opposite of faith. It is based on evidence and knowledge. So we say the evidence right now points to the Big Bang. Outside of that, do we know? No, we don't know. But they always, like, there's this massive fallacy in the way that he thinks. Not the way atheists think, but the way that, uber religious people think, where they'll claim, first of all, to have knowledge they don't have. Second of all, they make it seem like, yeah, it's so absurd to say the universe arose through natural processes. Totally, it's so absurd. Okay, but that means that you're saying it's supernatural processes, which means that so there was this God and poof, created everything. And then they make the argument, well, obviously if something exists, it needs to be created. Duh. They make the watchmaker argument. Well, for a watch to exist, it needed a watchmaker, right? Gotcha, you stupid atheists. Okay, but hold on. Let's actually apply that logic for a second here. If indeed that's true, for something that's so intricate to exist, it needs to be created. Who created God? I'm just using your logic. Yet this is the argument you guys made. I didn't make it. You made it. If it's super intricate and complex, it obviously had to be created. Duh. Okay. God is way more intricate and complex than us. He's God. He made everything. So who made God? You fail according to your own logic. What an epic fail. Unbelievable. Okay, we have more from him. We need to be calling atheism for what it is, a religion, an anti-God religion, a religion that exalts fallible human reason, a worship of man. Okay, first he was like, these guys also have blind faith. Now he's saying, you worship reason. Which is it? Do we have blind faith or do we worship reason? And to the charge of, hey, you worship reason, guilty. So what that means is, I'm not saying it's the end-all be-all and we have all the answers. Of course not. But I am saying that insofar as we're able to ascertain the answers, it will be ascertained through reason and logic and the scientific method, a process by which we ascertain the truth about the nature of reality. You're never going to get the right answers by doing the opposite of that, by making shit up or pretending to know shit that you don't know. You're never going to get it that way. So, guilty, do we think human reason is the best way to get reasonable answers about this world we live in? Yeah. But then to the idea that, hey, that's also a religion. No, I think Bill Maher said it best. Atheism is a religion like abstinence is a sex position. It is, by definition, the opposite of what you're saying. Okay, and then finally I'll give you one more here. He says, atheists work hard against Christianity because they're putting their hands over their eyes and ears and shouting, I refuse to see and hear the truth. I think that may break a Guinness World Record for irony. Look at all the irony just oozing and dripping from that one tweet. Yeah, it's atheists and non-religious people who
are just trying so hard to not see the truth of Christianity. They go, I know that's true, so I can't look at it. Dude, do you even know what's in your religion? But the thing about this guy is he does, and he still believes it, which is super scary. Because he's the guy who's building the Ark right now. Like this Ark Museum to say, see, this is historical fact. He's the guy who has the Creationist Museum where there are people riding dinosaurs. Dude, the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. People did not exist then. But he says, no, the world's 6,000 years old. And dinosaurs existed and people rode the dinosaurs. So he thinks that atheists are actively turning away from the truth of the Bible. Noah's Ark, a guy lives to age 900 and gets every animal in the world on an ark that can't fit them because it's not big enough and makes it so that they survive and they eventually repopulate the earth. By the way, he's the only guy who built a boat. Nobody else had a boat when the big flood came. Everybody else died. Nobody else had a boat. oops, we didn't get to the boat in time. There was a big flood. We didn't get to the boat in time. Everybody else died. He got every animal on the same boat. They fucked. They had little animal babies. He repopulated everything. He brought the kangaroos to Australia and brought other animals elsewhere. By the way, how did you get the climate right? How did the polar bears who need a cold climate coexist with the tigers who need a hot climate? How do the animals not eat each other? How are they going to eat? Where are they going to take, you know, have the food? And by the way, engineers say it is literally impossible to build an ark the size that they say he built it because the wood at the time would not bend that way without snapping. So you have the talking snake and the burning bush, and there's various parts of the Bible that allude to the fact that the earth is flat. This guy looks at that book, and he's like, stupid atheist, denying the truth. I mean, here it is right here. Hello, flat earth, everybody. Hello, seven-headed dragons, everybody. Hello, it's moral. It's the right thing to do to get your father drunk and rape him if you want babies. That's in the Bible. He looks at that, he's like, this is obvious. The damn atheists don't believe it. They're just closing their eyes and covering their ears from the truth is what they're doing. Right! It's us who are denying the plain truth which is right in front of us. Totally. Us. Not you. Us. Let's shoot on over to Naked Protest. This is good. There's a giant naked protest planned for the Republican National Convention, and it's a little weird. So Mike.com reports here, artist Spencer Tunick is enlisting 100 women willing to bear all in the early hours of July 17th as part of his Everything She Says Means Everything photographic installation. As the day dawns over Cleveland, home of the 2016 RNC, this nude army will hold its mirrors to the light, blinding convention goers with truth and much unclothed flesh. I don't know what that means. They continue. I don't know, they say, the photograph will involve 100 nude women holding large mirror discs reflecting the knowledge and wisdom of progressive women and the concept of Mother Nature into and onto the convention center, cityscape, and horizon of Cleveland. Tunick's website explains, the mirrors communicate that we are a reflection of ourselves, each other, and of the world that surrounds us. The woman becomes the future, and the future becomes the woman. I really don't know what this means. He continues, maybe I want it to be a work that women can be part of, or maybe to heighten the idea that women will decide the outcome of this election and will have a more powerful presence in the future of politics, the future of the country, and the future of the world. It's not so much a protest, but an action, a wake-up call to the absurdity of politics and discrimination. Okay, now, I don't know if this makes me a bad liberal, but I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. So when I first read the headline, I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I wonder exactly what's going on here and why they're deciding to have naked people at the RNC. Maybe it's some sort of a protest about women's reproductive rights and about contraception and the pill and abortion and Planned Parenthood and yada yada. No, it turns out it's not about that. It turns out they're just like, women are the future, and the future are women, and this is the truth of the naked flesh, and we're going to shine mirrors in your eyes to be symbolic about the way in which we represent the light of the earth and the salt of the earth. Dude, what the fuck are you saying? So, look, I gotta admit, man, I mean, I don't know what they're trying to do here. It just seems like they want to be naked in front of the RNC, and they don't really have a clear message, and nobody can get it just by looking at what they're doing. Nobody's going to look at the protest and go, oh, right, so that's what they mean. No, nobody can ascertain that, so I guess I got to be against this. But then in the end here, listen to this. This is the last line of the article that I thought was hilarious. They say, women who'd like to flash for their freedom to choose should send nudes, presumably a low-resolution, full-length photo of yourself, to Tunic's website. Oh, okay, no. Here's the deal. This guy's a creeper. The guy, the artist who set this up, he just wants to see naked people in public, and he gets off on it. Sorry. Like, that, I have zero doubt about that now. You know what it is? I don't know. Maybe I'm a little different, but there's like some... There's a certain faction of liberals out there who are like those mushy liberals who like read meaning into shit where there is no meaning. Like, in my opinion, modern art, I'm not really a big fan of modern art because I don't know what it means. And maybe that's, oh, you're being so closed-minded and bigoted. Or maybe the person who's the artist who made it, they don't know what the fuck it is either, and they're pretending something's there when it's not. And that's the case here. Oh, yeah, send nudes to my website because we're going to do this totally principled protest about something / something I can't explain and don't know. Okay, then this really isn't about anything. So, sorry, but fonts from the right to your naked protest is, what the fuck are they doing? It's not because they're bigoted or they're stupid or they don't get it. It's because, seriously, what the fuck are you doing? Nobody knows. All right. Now, let me squeeze in a few more here. Let's go to religiosity and how it affects health. This is interesting. So we have a fascinating new study out on how religiosity affects your health. So this is in Medical Daily. They say, Harvard University researchers analyzed data from Nurses' Health Study, a long-running population study of women. Specifically, they looked at 75,000 healthy participants who had answered a question about their attendance at religious services in 1992 and then kept track of them for up to 20 years afterwards. By 2012, 13,500 of the women had died, and after adjusting for other risk factors, the researchers found that those who said they attended a religious service more than once a week were 33% less likely to die of any cause than those who never attended a religious service at all. Overall, they calculated that attendance of one or more religious services a week was associated with about 5 months longer survival throughout the 16 years of study. Okay, so it is statistically significant. There is, people can look at this and go, something's going on here. But I would caution and let people know, this isn't evidence of religion being true. Far be it from that. That's a totally separate question. It's evidence of the potential utility of religion. So it might make people feel better, but just because it makes you feel better doesn't mean it is accurate. So those are two separate questions. Now, in terms of why that is, I don't know, man. It's an interesting thing to speculate on. And I have to admit, the first thing that came to my mind was, as a general rule, so on average, I think it's a fair statement to say, people who are born and raised in a religious environment, not necessarily a fundamentalist environment, but a religious environment where you go to your services every week or whatever the case is, and they go through the motions in that sense, they're typically raised with this kind of disciplinarian, organized, authoritarian mindset where all the answers are laid out in front of you and you just need to follow the path. So you just need to dot your I's and cross your T's and do what you're told. And people who live in that kind of a way, but they're not necessarily being super critical about everything, there is a benefit to that in terms of being on a path and feeling like that path is the correct path because you're just doing what you think you're supposed to do because it's been laid out for you. So people who, okay, hey, when I was a kid, I was taken to church. This is the religion I was raised in. Now
I'm continuing to be a part of that religion and to participate in the community. They're typically going to do the same thing when it comes to other aspects. So, for example, maybe your parents were, I don't know, accountants. So, hey, that's what I'm going to become. I'm going to become an accountant. Hey, my mom and dad got married at age 24. I'm going to get married at age 24. Hey, they had three kids and a white picket fence. I'm going to have three kids and a white picket fence. And you just go through the motions because you're following the path that was laid out for you. And it's really, and here's the most important point, not very introspective. Because if it was introspective and you're looking for answers, one of the first things you could do is shed that bullshit mythological religion, because it's no different than growing up in ancient Greece and believing in the Greek gods, or ancient Rome and believing in the Roman gods, or growing up in some Amazonian tribe and believing in the tribal gods. You know, so there's something to that mindset where there's a little bit of the conservatism thing too, the idea that ignorance is bliss. We've covered stories on the show before that liberals on average are smarter than conservatives. Conservatives on average are happier than liberals, because it's this thing of, hey, I already have my answers. I don't need to look any deeper. It is what it is. Jesus is God. You know, George Bush is great, yada, yada. And go to church and shut the fuck up. And there could be some potential psychological ease based off that, whereas people who are super intellectual and super critical and super skeptical, you're always analyzing everything, and that could have potential health consequences. And furthermore, now I'm part of the atheist camp that I don't see anything, like I'm not scared at the idea that I'm not going to exist at a certain point, because I think life is beautiful and you can take advantage of it when you're here. But there are some people who are atheists who admit, and they'll say, yeah, we don't have that same psychological pillow that religious people lay on at night, where they can say, well, when I die, it's all good because I was told I'm going to go to heaven and be with my dog from when I was in first grade and be with my grandma and yada, yada. And yeah, that can give people hope, and that can give you reason to go on in this life, because not everything is doom and gloom, where there's some people who are atheists who can be doom and gloom. Now, by the way, it's not a perfect correlation here, so it's not like everybody who is religious by definition is more hopeful and everybody who's atheist by definition is not. No, but we're just talking about on average here, and, you know, things that I'm sure you guys have noticed, I've noticed. There are plenty of atheists who admit, well, yeah, we don't have anything to say standing beside somebody at a coffin when you're looking at a dead body. Like, yep, that person's gone. Like, what are you going to say? Whereas a religious person, it's none of it's true, but they could say, oh, it's okay because they're in heaven and this and that, and there's this psychological angle to that that does have benefits. Now, again, totally, this is divorced from the conversation about truth, but is there evidence and is there, you know, something to the idea that people who regularly go to religious services, they could be a little happier, they can have more hope, and henceforth they can live longer? Sure. And there's no loss for atheism or agnosticism or irreligiosity in, you know, pointing that out and acknowledging that. And again, furthermore, it doesn't need to be the case, because atheists, I think, if you get more organized and, you know, we have that sense of community that the religious people have and some other things on top of it, well, then these statistics are liable to change. Perhaps we can make it so that it is indeed not true that people who are religious tend to live longer because they have more hope. Okay. All right, now let's go to Iran. Sad story coming out of there. Iran has launched a new crackdown on social media. You know, really important issues here. You don't want kids to have fun on the internet. So Reuters explains, they arrested fashion models active on photo-sharing websites and a blog website manager after Tehran's top leader declared war on un-Islamic thoughts on the internet. Eight members of a modeling network were arrested and accused of publishing photos of women without the obligatory hijab headscarf on the picture-sharing application Instagram. State television also broadcast live confessions of the models, and they continue here. The Grand Ayatollah was quoted as saying, "This is a real battlefield. The clerics and seminary students should prepare to enter this field and fight against deviations and erroneous thoughts." okay, that's hilarious in so many ways. Because you're not in the battlefield of ideas, as you claim. You are censoring and banning and shutting down those counter ideas because you dislike them. And he's doing it under the guise of it is a deviation and erroneous thoughts because it's not abiding with my strict interpretation of Islam. Okay, fuck off. You should let people do whatever they want to do as long as they're not hurting anybody else, religious or not. So they can tell you, hey, look, I'm Muslim and I disagree with your interpretation. And, you know, for you to say, I override that, well, then you're a prick. There's no other way to describe that. And what he's doing, what the Grand Ayatollah is doing here, and what the religious authorities are doing here, is they're raising a generation of thugs to bully and censor and restrict other people in Iran who are more secular, who are more embracing of freedom and liberty, and who want to express themselves. This is a recipe for disaster down the road. Now, Iran is already super young on average, and there are many more people in that younger generation who are much more secular than the old dinosaurs who run the country. So you're setting up a conflict, man. You're making it so that they're going to rebel and they're going to despise the government. They already despise the government. And they're compounding that problem, and the hilarious thing is he thinks he's keeping it real. Like the Grand Ayatollah, well, un-Islamic thoughts. We must crack down on this on the internet because it's the right thing to do. No, it's not. You're just a cranky, old, theocratic, authoritarian bigot and an idiot. And you got your young, brainwashed thugs out there backing up your ridiculous agenda. And look at how far they're going. They're going as far as arresting fashion models, women, probably beautiful Iranian women, who are not covering up their heads sufficiently. We must crack down on you because I am in total and utter control and my interpretation of Islam says you must have no freedom. Well, guess what? You've just set up a recipe for to create more secularists, more atheists, more agnostics, more liberal Muslims in Iran than you could ever imagine. I mean, you're doing the job of the West for them. If the West's goal was to, hey, let's have more secular people, let's have more freedom and liberalism in Iran, well, now you're cracking down so much that there's going to be a backlash. And they're going to say, fuck off with your stupid rules. They're draconian. They're dumb. And that's what it comes down to. You can't, outside of just saying, religion, so, you know, you can't disagree with me. There is no defense to actions like this, you know. You're a woman and you showed your hair, you slut. How dare you? That argument carries no water if outside of the bounds of religion. Because the only thing is, it's my religion, and these are the rules from the Almighty, so that's why I'm enforcing them. Well, as soon as you realize that's not true, all you are is a cranky old guy who's trying to control young women. So then people go, well, fuck off. You have no right to do that. I'm going to do what I want. It's got nothing to do with you. And then TikTok, it's only a matter of time until these guys are in serious trouble. So Iran, as a general rule, Iran has actually been more lenient than, for example, Saudi Arabia, who are even more, you know, ultra-conservative, and they're Salafist. It's a Wahhabi government that's even worse than the Shia Islamist government in Iran. But now they're cracking down because they see the rise of liberalism and freedom and secularism and education brought about by the internet and Western entertainment and stuff, and they might see the writing on the wall. So now they're fighting hard for their own survival. And by the way, this is more evidence that they can't win in the battlefield of ideas. If you really thought you had the better argument, you wouldn't need to ban and censor and lock people up for this. You could just tell them they're wrong and explain it, and they would understand because you're right. But you're not right. So that's why you have to resort to these measures, because you know we win on the battlefield of ideas. Okay. And final story here. RT is reporting on a really sad story coming out of Denmark. They say a group of bar owners from one of Copenhagen's suburbs who have been harassed by Muslim youth activists trying to impose a so-called Sharia zone have taken their case to a government minister, urging her to protect their businesses and the locals. The groups have been threatening extorting, and vandalizing bars in broad daylight. The concept of Sharia zones was introduced by a group called Call to Islam some 5 years ago. Pockets of activists embark on daily patrols of the neighborhood and approach those who drink, gamble, or engage in other activities seen by the group as running contrary to Islamic beliefs. The gangs also use firecrackers and stones to smash windows, while the police seem unable to stop them. One bar owner claims that the gang asked them for $9,200 as so-called protection money. Oh, so what we have here is young thugs who are acting like the mafia. Young religious thugs acting like the mafia. Okay, here's the deal. You can only come to the melting pot if you're going to melt a little bit. See, that's the way this works. So in other words, if you come here and you say, not only am I going to practice my religion, which is totally fine. You can do whatever the fuck you want to do as long as you're not hurting anybody else. But you're saying, I am going to force everybody else to practice my religion because I say so. Well, no, you can fuck right off because they don't have to do dick that you want them to do. See, we have this thing called freedom and secularism and liberalism. So you want to practice your religion? By all means, practice your religion. But when you start trying to shut down bars or stop people from gambling or demand money for protection, well, all of a sudden you're breaking a variety of different rules and laws and vandalizing property, and you're the bad guy. You're the bad guy. So this isn't based on, oh, the bigotry of the bar owners who won't just submit to Sharia. No, you are wrong to try to get them to submit to Sharia. They don't want to do fucking Sharia. And people have a right in the country to go and have a beer at the bar. They have a right to run a bar. They have a right to do whatever the fuck they want to do without your bullshit approval from your non-existent space fairy who you think you're getting marching orders from. So what I would say is it's pathetic the police have not already cracked down on this, but do your fucking job. It doesn't make you a bigot. It doesn't make you, you know, anti-Muslim. It doesn't make you any of those things. It makes you pro-freedom, pro-secularism, and pro-liberalism to protect other people's rights to drink, to gamble, to do what they want when they're not hurting anybody. In this case, these young thugs are the ones who are hurting people, and they're breaking the laws. So, yes, give them a trial, go through due process, but lock their punk asses up because they're wrong and they're criminals, and they're not going to change everybody's way of life simply by insisting that their Sharia is best. That's no different than Pat Robertson saying, I want to force you to do Christian Sharia, and you have to abide by my religion. No, all of you can fuck off. We're going to do what we want, and that's the way it goes. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. We'll see you tomorrow. Mwah. Kisses. Peace.